This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. This is the Baseball Outside the Box show. And guess what? It's a unique one today because we are delving into new territory, not just with our talk, but we're going to have two guests on one show at the same time. Boy, are we getting high tech or what? I know this is the very first time it's historical for Baseball Outside the Box. We are slow to catch up a little bit sometimes, but we're getting there. Can you believe this? Two experts on the show at the same time. I'm looking forward to it. Never done it before. Be a learning experience for me. As we say, jump into the fearful thing so you become better. Well, this is one of those fearful things for me. So let's see how I do. There'll be a great test for me. First of all, don't forget, check out baseballoutsidethebox.com. All the shows there. You can go back and check out all the shows. Check out Twitter at Baseball Out. Special thanks to Brian Kroc, our producer of the show, the Lineup Media Group. Thank you guys for putting the show up. You guys are fantastic. And don't forget, my good friend Rob Tong, he was on his show not too long ago, great baseball podcast, and, you know, his mom passed away about a week before my dad passed away, January 2nd, so he gave me a shout-out and condolences. Want to give him and his family a shout-out, condolences. Thank you very much. Really appreciate the support, and I appreciate all the support from all our listeners, all the emails and everything on Facebook. You guys are fantastic. Hey, just got back. Got to tell you, from the Massachusetts High School Coaches Baseball Convention, and our guest, matter of fact, just spoke the same weekend at the Illinois High School Coaches Convention. But I want to give a shout-out to Frank Carey and all his group, John Casey and all those guys at the Massachusetts Clinic. You guys are fantastic. Great organization. Great format. Love listening to all the speakers also. So thanks for inviting me. Really had a great time. Don't forget also, Caliendo Sports International. We are heading to Cuba, Italy, Japan in the summer. We're finalizing our rosters. What a great baseball life, cultural experience. Join us as a coach, as a player, 14 to 17 years old. If you're interested, get a hold of me. Peter Caliendo at, guess what, att.net. And lastly, thank you to all our listeners checking out Ranker. Ranker ranks the best podcast in the world. I mean, I tell you what, we are number four. We're not one, but we're going to try to get to be one. But we're behind some pretty good ones, Effectively Wild, Fangraphs, Baseball Podcast, and also Baseball Tonight by Buster Olney. So we're going to, you know, be trying to catch up to these guys. We'll be right behind you. We are working hard. If you got any suggestions to make the show better, please let us know. Okay? All right, man, let's rock and roll. This show today is going to be on a specific product. Just came out that I'm going to let these guys explain everything. Flex Pro Grip. They are on Twitter at Flex Pro Grip and also on their website, flexprogrip.com. This is to develop a stronger grip, but also it's going to enhance safety. It's going to make you stronger. It's supposed to have you throw harder. All these guys are going to explain all this stuff. We're going to get into it. Let me tell you about these two guys because I'm going to have to, you know, I don't have a PhD, so I might have to print one up just to show them maybe that I've been working on it. Got two unbelievable guys here, Adam Morrow and Daryl Morrow. Let me tell you a little bit about Adam. Adam graduated at Eckerd 2016. Hey, get this, valedictorian business administration class, his MBA at the University of Dayton in 2018, where he played baseball for both schools. And later on, he had some complications with shoulder surgery in 2015. It doesn't this happen a lot, boy, a lot of issues. And then guys want to get going and make sure that maybe they can help others. Well, that's what these guys are doing. Adam elected a forego his professional baseball career and went on helping baseball players and the generic potential by founding the New Orleans Sports Performance Institute and then Flex Pro Grip. Since retiring from baseball, Adam's ability to maximize the use of cutting-edge technology has enabled him to enhance phenomenal success working with the collegiate professional players, attracting interest from several major league organizations. So this is something new, and these guys are in the business of helping individuals develop better. And then you got Daryl. the CEO and Adam's the president of the company. Since graduating, Daryl BSM from Tulane University in 83, where he played basketball, the captain of the Green Wave. And then after that, he received his MBA, worked in healthcare for 27 years, 17 as a CEO, 30 physicians. He was a CEO of 30 physicians, cardiology practice, and in the last 10 years, operating a healthcare consulting firm, negotiating mergers. Hey, these guys are awesome. Great background. They've come up with a fantastic product. I want to hear all about it. I want all our people around the world to hear about it. Let's get right into it. Let's welcome Adam and Daryl. What's up, buddies? How are you?
We're doing great. Thanks for having us on, Pete. Been excited, been fans of the show for a while, and finally excited to get on and have the conversation with the world.
What's up, Daryl?
Same. I couldn't agree more, Pete. When it comes to baseball and podcasts, the work that you do is absolutely outstanding, and we couldn't be more excited than have a chance to talk with you and all of your listeners to do all we can to help accelerate the learning curve when it comes to UCL care and prevention and all of the collateral items that go along with it.
All right. Fantastic. And at least I know I got two listeners on the show, so I really appreciate that. hey, we got to start somewhere, right? And sorry for the long intro, but we've had a lot going on in our life in the last couple of weeks and wanted to shout out to a lot of people out there. But we're going to get right into it. This is a new product for me, brand new. Didn't get a chance to listen. I've looked at your website, obviously, at flexprogrip.com. You've got a newsletter. You've got a blog. I want people to go to it. I want people to start researching everything about your product. So let's start right away. I know there's a founder. There was a founder involved with this. There's orthopedic surgeons. There's all kinds of things that happen to get this product going. So, let's get started with that. And I'll let Daryl, if you want to get started, how this all got going, or Adam, who wants to take the role here?
I'll start. This is Daryl, Pete, and then Adam can fill in the blanks as we go. So as you identified in my brief bio, I have a fairly extensive background working with physicians over the last 2 to 3 decades. And throughout those, my efforts in that arena, I became very, very good friends with truly a world-class sports medicine physician by the name of Gunnar Brolinson. Gunnar is the head physician at Virginia Tech, and at one point he was the head physician for the U.S. Olympic mogul and downhill ski teams, and he's done a lot of work on the NCAA Concussion Committee Task Force, so he's truly a big name in sports medicine, and he was kind enough over the years to provide care for Adam as Adam pursued his own baseball journey. So as you identified with Adam, has had some shoulder injuries that ultimately derailed his professional aspirations as a baseball player. But as he moved through that, we would routinely go over to Blacksburg to have Dr. Brolinson check Adam out and see whatever he could do to try and keep him healthy or get him as healthy as possible. And as Adam's baseball career began to wind down, we started training a number of players, athletes, mostly baseball players, and predominantly at the kind of a elite high school level and then the collegiate and professional level down in New Orleans. And one of the things that we were immediately impressed by when we started looking at a ton of the research surrounding sports performance was just the tremendously high correlation between grip strength and throwing velocity and bat speed. And obviously every baseball player, if he's a position player, he wants to figure out how to increase his bat speed, to increase exit velocity, hit the ball harder, all the things that go along with it. And it's exceedingly rare to find a pitcher who's not primarily concerned with figuring out how to throw harder. So when we looked at those two things, the notion of how grip strength might have an application to throwing velocity or bat speed was something that piqued our interest. So whenever we get into those situations, we get, particularly if it involves anything about the human body, I'll typically rely upon the experts because, there are a lot of guys who are a heck of a lot smarter than we are when it comes to that. So in a discussion I had with Dr. Brolinson one day, he was particularly intrigued by that and asked us to spend some time up in Blacksburg on top of him being able to examine Adam, to meet with one of his partners who invented this grip training device. The precursor of that grip training device was essentially what has now become Flex Pro Grip. So that's kind of how the whole evolution got started. Adam, why don't you pick up a little bit and you can talk about kind of how we'll move from there.
Yeah, I think Daryl covered a lot of the bases. We've really moved on well from that time. So obviously Daryl talked about Dr. Brolinson. He introduced us to Brian Dickens. Dr. Brian Dickens works with Brolinson at Virginia Tech. And this product really was his brainchild. But as you know, physicians, they've got patients to see. They've got a lot bigger fish to fry than a product on the side. So their group brought us on to develop the product and bring it to market. So since then, Daryl and I have made our way around. We've gone to the ABCA National Convention. We've gone to the Illinois, Georgia, and Texas state high school conventions, just trying to spread the word on what we can do to prevent UCL tears. And along the way, we've done our initial testing, and we're right at the tipping point, the launching point of our product. So we're very excited to speak to the world at this time.
Adam, let's talk about, you know, the product just newly out. You know what? The first thing that comes to my mind is this. 37 years ago or whatever it was when I started, and, you know, even as a player, when I started as a young kid, one of the exercises we used to do all the time is, you know, we used to roll up weights, you know, and build up our forearms. Are we making a full circle all the way around because of technology and coming back to see how important this is? Developing the grip?
Yeah, there's Pete, there's no question we've done it about face, and in some ways come full circle. Pete, actually, Adam just walked in and he said he was having some technical difficulties in his call drop, so I'm not sure how you would like to proceed from here. I'm certainly happy to address any questions.
Now, if you can answer that, go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, certainly there's been kind of an evolution when it comes to how we go about grip strengthening, and particularly care of the UCL. And what it really comes down to is which muscles end up having our best position to actually reduce stress or absorb torque that gets loaded onto the UCL. Certainly doing any of the wrist rolls that you've talked about, they will work some of those muscles. But when it comes to UCL care, one of the things that our research has taught us over the past year and in working with these physicians is that there are only a few muscles that are optimally positioned to really protect the UCL. And oftentimes what we've done over the years from a training standpoint is we train certain muscles to maybe increase forearm strength or increase grip strength, but those muscles may not be the ones that are necessarily the ones that are most important for us to actually provide the level of additional support to the elbow when it comes to reducing UCL tears.
You know, and I wanted to maybe jump back a little bit. We'll see. I don't know if Adam's with you. Maybe you can just transfer the phone to him. I wanted to go back on this question. You know, we talk about, you know, throwing it. Obviously, is a very violent action, creates a lot of tearing. Is it just the velocity that causes that tearing, or are there other functions as we're talking about strength and some other issues?
Well, you kind of started to go down the path, Pete. So as velocity goes up, torque goes up. And torque is kind of the magical word or phrase that we're dealing with here. It's not that all torque is bad, but just as torque continues to increase, UCL tears are more likely to happen. But there's some other things that come into the mix here. So torque will increase if there are mechanical issues in somebody's throwing motion. Like I said, as velocity increases, or if there's a weakness somewhere in the body that might not be able to handle the normal pitch.
Mm-hmm. Is this an issue of starting at what point in a player's career? I mean, you know, we hear all these issues of the UCL tears, you know, at the college, at the pro level, big league level. But certainly they can't begin there.
No, you're spot on. So research has shown that these issues or changes in the anatomy of the UCL are occurring as young as little leaguers. So the earliest testing has been done really in groups of 10 to 13 year olds. And with these groups, one really specific study was done with 343 little leaguers, which saw an insane amount of abnormalities in the elbow. So what we're typically seeing, I don't know if you have heard of it before, but I'm sure a lot of the listeners even have as well, this concept of little league elbow. So little league elbow, to really simplify it, is when we're young and we're growing, the ligaments will often be stronger than the bones. So the throwing motion, as we all know, wouldn't really be considered a natural motion. So as we go to throw, the ligament pulls on the humerus right where that UCL attaches. So basically the funny bone. And with the ligament being stronger than the bone, it starts to pull off that little bit of bone where it attaches. So that's what happened with 63% of these kids at the little league level. Now, the reason more of these kids aren't tearing their UCLs is, to be quite frank, as they get older, it's either they don't throw hard enough or they just quit baseball.
Now, here's an interesting part. I want to ask you, because a Flex Pro grip, you know, is, as you said, the research, and it prevents UCL tears or helps prevent UCL tears by targeting strength and precise, it says here, the precise muscles best positioned to reduce the torque. Give us a, you know, it's a podcast, but give us an example of what the device might look like. And, you know, when you're using it, you know, how it works.
Yes. So the device is basically a batting glove with rings attached to the fingers. Mm-hmm. So there's some kind of technological nuances to it that allows us to have our patented technologies in the way that it's designed. But truly, each player would wear their own glove. It's not like you wear it while you pitch. But you can think about it this way. So you can go to any park around the world at this point, and you can see a baseball player using bands to warm up to throw, or post-throwing to cool down, just to do their shoulder care. The problem is nobody has done this for the elbow. People think they have done it, but they really haven't, because they haven't been able to target the muscles. So what we allow them to do with our glove is we can attach bands or another form of resistance, whether it's weights, to the fingers to isolate the muscles and tendons that attach right around where the UCL attaches. So we can strengthen the bodies or the muscles that can take stress off of the UCL.
And I got to tell you, then, when you're talking about a product like this, talking about utilizing this product, obviously, in practice, on your own, anytime you throw, anytime you play catch, pitch, whatever throwing skill you're doing, not just in baseball, but in other sports too. And we're talking about having this as an addition to, as you said, with the cords. Because my question would be this: there's a lot of stress on the UCL, obviously. Can this come about because of other factors in the movement of the body, or the lack of strength in the body, whether it's the hips or thighs or quads, hamstrings, backside? you know, so many different things that allow you to even throw the ball harder. So is this this is going to complement everything?
Well, yes, in short answer, I think to step back just a bit, Pete, I think what was probably one of the most revealing things for us early in the research that we did was really understanding both the amount of torque that gets placed on the UCL when you throw and how that torque gets handled. So for that, one of the things that we've looked to is there's been an extensive body of research in this arena over the last two decades, and probably no one has been more pivotal in providing this research than the American Sports Medicine Institute, Dr. Andrews mm-hmm. Institute, and his team of researchers, and led by Dr. Glenn Fleissig. And Adam and I had the wonderful pleasure of going over to meet with that entire research team at ASMI. Oh, it's probably a couple months ago, to just go through all of their research over the years. And in some of Glenn's studies, they have basically determined that torque placed on the elbow when you throw on roughly an 80-mile-per-hour pitch, which obviously most college players are throwing well above that, and professional players are approaching 100-mile-per-hour speed routinely now. But even on an 80-mile-an-hour pitch, the torque that gets applied to the elbow has been roughly calculated to be 80 Newton meters. Now, we don't need to spend 20 minutes talking about what a Newton meter is. Just know for all of your listeners, it's just the level of torque. It's the amount of twisting force that gets placed on your elbow. Now, here's the problem, though. So we start with that number 80, and this concept of UCL tears then simply becomes a math problem, Pete. So what I mean by that is the total torque on your elbow when you throw an 80-mile-per-hour pitch is roughly 80 Newton meters, according to Dr. Fleissig's studies. The UCL alone can only withstand about 35 of those 80 Newton meters. You know, wow. We always looked at it when we went into this and thought, well, if you throw a baseball, the UCL does its job, it handles the torque. And what we found is that's not the case at all. The UCL has only been calculated to handle about 35 of those 80 Newton meters. So then you say, okay, where's the rest of that support to handle the torque that's being placed on the elbow going to come from? Well, you have bones that sit on the other side of your elbow that compress, and that bone basically is your radius, which is one of the two bones that extends from your elbow to your wrist. And then you have your humerus, which obviously extends from your shoulder to your elbow. Mm-hmm. Well, the bones on that side of your elbow then compress when you go to throw a baseball. And the torque that gets placed on your elbow, it's important to understand when that torque gets applied. And the greatest amount of torque gets applied when you are at what the biomechanists refer to as maximum external rotation. People think of it as that layback position that you see when people mm-hmm. throw a baseball. Well, when you do that, again, the math equation is very simple. UCL torque is at 35. Researchers have shown that the compression of the bones only handle about another 20 to 25 Newton meters of that torque. So let's say even if we give 25, now we're at 60. But remember, we have to get to 80. So where's the rest of that torque absorption going to come from? And it turns out there's been an extensive body of research led by some of the truly greatest innovators when it comes to UCL care, including Dr. Jobe, who was the first one who performed the Tommy John surgery years ago, decades ago, and Dr. Andrews, and then Dr. Chris Ahmad, who's the head physician for the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And what they've all said is that there are only three muscles that are optimally positioned to offset some of the torque that gets placed on your elbow when you throw. So I realize this has been a long-winded answer to your question, but what we do with our device is our device has been uniquely designed so that it enables users to isolate those precise muscles in a way that none of the more traditional exercises that you talked about, whether it's rice buckets or squeezing a tennis ball or doing mm-hmm. rolling wrist weights or whatever may be, it's not that those are bad, but those don't give you the ability to optimally isolate those muscles in a way that the device that's been invented by Dr. Dickens that we've been developing for well over a year enables users to do. So it's really that simple. So we have a device that truly enables baseball players to both train and strengthen those muscles that are optimally positioned, as I said, truly just to help the body absorb torque that occurs when you throw a baseball. It's really that simple. So to Adam's point earlier, when he talked about this concept of we have bands that have become just tremendously universal for baseball players, and that's fantastic. I mean, research has shown that over the last decade, shoulder injuries at the major league level have decreased by 58%. But the extension of that is elbow injuries have increased by 60% because we just keep pushing torque down the elbow.
I love the way that was explained, I got to tell you, because I know I've got a lot better understanding where we're going with this. And here's the question. I mean, we're talking about 80 miles per hour on the torque, you know, and you said, you know, obviously college guys throwing that. And we're getting in the zones of 100 now, you know, 95, 100. We've got to make up for that, you know, to be able to strengthen these muscles. Where does this go for? I mean, where does it go for the guys that are throwing 95, 100, 103? You know, because we got you know, high school guys. I've got a Japanese player throwing 102 who's in high school. How's the product? How does this product help them?
So that is a great question, Pete, and that is one of the best applications of the product. So as Daryl was taking us through it, it's that math equation. But the problem is two of the solutions aren't variable. So the UCL, as Daryl stated, can only handle roughly 35 Newton meters of torque. And that's standard. I mean, it'll maybe from person to person, it changes slightly, but we can't strengthen that ligament to then handle more torque. And then it's the same thing with the bones. The bone compression force doesn't just increase. We can't train that either. But what we can train, and it's been proven for all of human existence, we can train muscles to get stronger. So if we can train muscles to get stronger, the muscles and the tendons, just by result, get stronger too. So those can bear the torque. So as those torques, as we stated earlier, increase with higher velocity pitching, now the muscles have to do way more of the work. So for someone who doesn't throw as hard, where the muscles might only handle 20 Newton meters of torque, as someone is throwing closer to 100 miles per hour or even more, that torque is going to, the torque the muscles can handle, it goes way up. It's going to be closer to 40 Newton meters of torque or even 50 with some of the hardest throwers. So training the muscles becomes so much more important.
Yeah, now we're going to go back a little bit because, you know, on the show we talk about this a lot. You know, there's a lot of shows that focus, and I get it. I mean, we have a lot of college coaches, high school professionals that listen to the show, and thank you for all those guys for listening because we got some great, great guests at all different levels. But, you know, it keeps coming back to the young kids, you know, because a lot of products are produced for older players. And sometimes because, you know, people don't know how to get to the younger markets. But, you know, if this all starts at the young levels, you know, we know there's pitch counts and that's, you know, that's great. That helps a little bit, but boy, we've really got to get this product in the hands of younger kids. How young can they start it? I mean, as soon as you start throwing?
Absolutely. There's no reason that a 10-year-old kid should not be using this device. One of the things that Dr. James Andrews and all the researchers at ASMI have done a wonderful job is they've they've addressed the role of fatigue that and the role that fatigue plays in causing UCL tears. And I think sometimes people misunderstand how that fatigue actually translates into UCL tears occurring. And here's probably the best way to think about it. The UCL itself, or the ulnar collateral ligament, that's not what is fatiguing when someone throws a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When someone throws a lot, what tends to happen, it's no different than if we run a lot or if we lift weights a lot or we jump a lot, what fatigues? Our muscles begin to fatigue. Well, in this instance, if you only have two or three muscles that are optimally positioned to offload that torque that comes on the elbow, the excessive throwing causes that muscle to fatigue. And if those muscles fatigue, that just means you end up shifting more torque onto the elbow when you throw.
Mm-hmm.
And if you shift more torque onto the elbow that the UCL can handle, guess what? That's when tears start to occur. And you think of a lifetime of throwing with kids now playing year-round and starting throwing as early as we know, 6, 7, 8 years old. That's why studies have consistently shown significant elbow changes in kids as young as 10, 11 years old. So the earlier a young baseball player can begin to train with a device like this, the faster he can strengthen his overall muscles, which over time obviously will enable him to continue to train, because we get the race. The race is still for kids. It doesn't matter what you and I say, and we've been around this game a long time. Kids understand once they start approaching the high school collegiate level, the price of admission oftentimes does become velocity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we understand that there's a sort of a back and forth that has to be played there. But our hope is that if we can help kids strengthen the muscles that are best positioned to offload some of that torque on the elbow, that we can significantly reduce the rate of injury that occurs to those UCLs. So with our device, one of the things that we understand right away is, as you well know, much as we've seen, there are tons of devices that flood the baseball market offering different things. And we like to say the last thing someone wants is another device. What they really want is a solution to their problem. So that's
mm-hmm.
why we've been working with the physicians, not just to have a device, but to truly have a clinically based training protocol that can actually identify for people exactly what they should be doing. So the basic model with our device is you get the device. When you get the device, you will go on our site and we will identify for you a series of tests that we want the user to perform. With those tests, they'll then just input their results. And based on the results, we'll be able to identify where they might have strength imbalances. And then our site will then outline the specific training protocol that they should follow. And then we're just following, basically applying a test-retest model where every month they will retest where they're at to see what gains they've made. And then that way we'll actually be able to quantify the level of improvement that they've made to know where they might have strength imbalances and how we can just move them along in their careers.
You know, bingo, grand slam. And I'll tell you why. You know, I was thinking to myself, well, okay, this is great. We got a product. A lot of people have products. The product's scientifically, you know, is very good. It's, you know, there's great research behind it. There's doctors with ASMI. I mean, you know, we're all familiar with it. And then my next question was going to be, you know, what complements all this? What's the protocols? And boy, did you answer that perfectly. I love that now that there's protocols, there's a series of tests, there's the input they put in, you know, you determine their strength, you know, and their weaknesses, and then you show them the things that they need to work on. We're talking about a complete package here where now when they do this, they just throw the glove on and follow the process and then all the results are kind of given there. So they know what the next step is.
Yes. So as Daryl said, we're trying to offer that complete solution, not just the device. So what players will be given is their pregame protocol. So basically the bands or the short
battery of exercises that they would do to warm up before they pitch or before they throw. And then obviously the game gets played or they go to practice. They make all those in-game throws, and then they need a post-throwing protocol. So then that protocol will differ from kid to kid or player to player. So my protocol may be different than your protocol just based on different imbalances. So that's why the testing is so important. So we spit out that very specific program for each individual to follow. And then we allow them to enter that data back into our site. So then we can constantly adjust their plan as needed. One of the things that we've kind of found in our pre-testing or our pre-launch testing is really wasn't even one of the main focuses of the product initially. Obviously, we wanted to reduce the risk of UCL tears, and that's our main goal in all of this. But one of the things we found is that strength and balances from finger to finger, specifically the pointer finger and the middle finger, really dictate the way the ball moves. So with the way the ball moves, for me, at least, I was always a guy that dealt with a ton of two-seam run. I played infield, so, I mean, that's not a good look with the ball coming across the diamond and it shifting from left to right and first baseman having no clue what's coming at him. So no matter what, every coach told me my entire career to get on top of the ball or really try to pull it down. But the harder I tried to pull the ball down, the harder it shifted to the right. Not until we went through our testing did we know that I had extreme strength imbalance between my pointer finger and my middle finger. So then I thought, this is really curious. Let me start testing the other guys in the facility to see if this holds true with our pitchers who are primarily cutter guys or primarily two-seam guys. So we got a small group, about 10 guys, just in our preliminary testing. And lo and behold, four of the guys were heavy two-seam guys in this testing group, and they were all stronger in their middle finger. Then we had three guys who were primarily cutter guys, and they were significantly stronger in their middle finger than their pointer finger. And then we have a few guys, not to get too technical, but kind of have balls that stay on plane or the normal projected spin based on tracking devices that are now pretty widely used. And they were pretty equal from finger to finger. And without a testing protocol that is able to really dive into these numbers or see these differences, there's no way that somebody could identify this and then train to solve that problem.
Absolutely. Adam, the movement patterns of the actual pitch or throw, that comes into play also with this. Having the right, what people call mechanics, how does the glove help that aspect of it? Or is that separate?
That's a great question. So the fancy clinical term that physicians will use routinely is this concept of neuromuscular control, which is essentially our body's ability to control muscle movement almost automatically. You know, it's not a premeditated movement. If you and I want to get a glass of water, we can pick up the glass and we can move it in a slow motion to actually contract the muscles that enable us to bring that glass to our mouths to drink. But if you're executing a really high-speed movement, like throwing a baseball, it's not like your brain has the ability to slow down and calculate each individual movement that has to occur. So what we can do with this device is actually train the brain's ability to control muscle movement at the highest speeds, which if you think about it, you throw a baseball, the last body part that connects the baseball are the tips of your two fingers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out there have been numerous researchers that have looked at just that, and they wanted to understand just how the fingers were flexing at the point of release of a baseball. And what they found is, based on the amount of force that you can even apply on really just the last joint or the tips of your fingers, that has a tremendous impact on the amount of spin that you can impart on a baseball. Guys like you and I can go back in time and think of kind of the poster child of pitch movement, and it was Greg Maddux before things like Rapsodo and TrackMan even existed. And he would just befuddle guys with the amount of spins that he could impart on a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
yep.
Essentially, that's what we now we're very optimistic. Obviously, we're early in some of our testing, but we're very optimistic that by following the protocols that Adam talked about to enable us to identify where imbalances might occur, we're actually beginning to see the ability for guys to actually manipulate different spin on a baseball based on applying different force, either between their pointer finger or their middle finger, which ultimately obviously translate into the amount of spin and movement that a ball might have.
And I got to ask you this, I think it's a question that somebody listening to the show is, it's going to be on their minds. I know you said the product's going to come out, and I use the word product, but I'm not sure that's the right word. But the product's going to come out in about a month. Now, you've tested, but I know you've gone through all the research and everything. Have you tested it with players? And if you have, what's been the feedback of some of the players when they're used, you know, when they used it?
So, Pete, I can give you the advanced feedback and I can give you the really simple feedback. So we'll start
okay.
with the simple. The simple feedback is players saying, wow, I don't think I've ever been sore in that muscle before or in that spot before after working out. So that's obviously it's an untouched muscle. Part of the problem is pain has been normalized in throwing for so long, but pain isn't supposed to be there, right? Pain isn't good. We're trying to avoid it. So if we can train those muscles, or if we can generate that soreness or that adaptation just from exercise, we're obviously working the specific muscles that they use when they throw or that impart spin on the baseball. So that's the really simple feedback. In more advanced feedback, we've kind of had to take a winding path because part of the problem is we need to do true UCL testing. We would need a group of 10-year-olds to start with the device right now, and we would need to track them for 5 to 10 years to see how this device will really help them over time. So we'll be the first to admit that we haven't been able to do a longitudinal clinical test because the product hasn't existed for that long. However, in grip strength testing, in programs ranging from 6 to 8 weeks, the product has seen grip strength improvements of 60 to 80%. So there's no question that the performance aspect is growing, and the muscles that ASMI have identified as the primary and only stabilizers or helpers of the UCL can be trained by our device.
Gotcha. Adam and Daryl, listen, just so you know, towards the end, I'll let you know here in a little bit. I'll kind of open it up to both of you, and you guys can add anything else you like that, you know, we've missed. Obviously, I've missed. There's a lot to talk about. But there might be something specific that, you know, you wanted to mention. You didn't get a chance to mention it. Well, that'll be at the end. You know, and I was going over some of your website stuff. You know, I like the part, obviously, we talked about preventing UCL tears. You know, improves velocity, you know, and that's common sense, you know, and it could also improve pitch command, improve spin rate. You talked about that. I hope we never have to get to this, and I'm hoping it avoids the next part, and that is accelerate rehab, because rehab is usually when somebody gets hurt. But that's reality. People are going to get hurt. But if they start young and, you know, and use it early on, that would really help. So take me through and our audience one more time. Just because I think it's important to understand this well, take us back, either Andrew, or excuse me, Adam or Daryl, take us back to how the actual product, the glove, works, how it actually, strengthens those muscles that help the UCL.
Right. So the muscles, again, that we need to hit on are the flexor carpi nerus, the flexor digitorum profundus, and the flexor digitorum superficialis. Obviously, I just hit everyone with the really fancy Latin names, so I encourage everyone to pull up their Google, whether it's phone, computer, and just give themselves a brief little anatomy lesson, because it really is powerful when the UCL is only the size of a large paperclip. It's about 2 inches long. So we're dealing with something very small that plays a huge role in the careers of so many people. So the way that the glove works, again, there's rings attached to each finger, and those rings allow for a band or a weight attachment. So instead of just holding bands in our hands, we can actually isolate each finger, because those three muscles that I listed all control finger movement or wrist movement that's going to impact how well the UCL can stay healthy. So the way that we train is we can attach bands to a fence in our fingers, over our foot in our fingers, just any way to create resistance. And then we give you, with your protocol, a very specific motion or repetitions that you should be performing to strengthen one of those three or all muscles. And Daryl's going to hop back in just to kind of pick up the loose ends for me.
Absolutely. Hey, Daryl.
The reason is some of the listeners out there may be thinking, well, wait a second. This UCL attaches to your elbow, and you guys just keep talking about attaching these bands to your fingers and doing different exercises to your fingers. And just to go back, we may have touched upon this earlier, but the reason that becomes so critical is this concept of origin and insertion of where muscles actually start and what they control. So it turns out, through extensive research, what we've learned over the years is that we have roughly 20 total muscles that actually control finger and wrist movement in our hands. About roughly 12 of those muscles control our ability to extend our fingers. So if you think about, you start with a closed fist and you open your fingers, that would be extending your fingers. So you have about 12 of those 20 muscles that really control your ability to extend your wrist or fingers. Nearly all of those muscles attach on the elbow on the outer side of your arm. That's the one where people typically get tennis elbow, like from hitting backhands or something like that. But that's the elbow on the outside of your arm. Turns out you have about 8 muscles which actually control your ability to flex your fingers. Or if you had your hand completely wide open and you were closing your fingers into a fist, that would be flexion. Those 8 muscles basically all originate at or near what fancy title, medial epicondyle, or your funny bone. And then it turns out your UCL actually starts or originates at that same point. Now, so we've narrowed it down to, you start to kind of do this as a process of deduction. So if we have roughly 8 muscles that control flexion and the majority of those muscles attach at the same point that the UCL attaches, then we start to drill down and say, okay, now which of those 8 are even best positioned to protect the UCL? And that's what we do. So if we can identify with our device those muscles that truly are in the absolute best position to protect the UCL and train those, then we're onto something. So it turns out that 3 of those muscles actually have muscle fibers or tendinous fibers that actually attach onto the UCL itself. And those muscles actually extend and control certain finger movements. So when we talk about putting a band on a ring or attaching that to a certain finger and putting you through different exercises, as we perform certain exercises with our fingers, we're actually strengthening the muscle that actually then ends up connecting right at the same point that the UCL connects. And in some instances has muscle fibers that attach directly onto the UCL. So we're really just working backwards by applying resistance to a finger to train a muscle that's ultimately going to get stronger and overlay the UCL, hence providing greater protection when you actually throw.
And I love the part about working backwards, because that's an old Russian theory of working backwards, even in your skills, instead of starting from the beginning, you know, taking the end result of your skill and working backwards. You guys have really clarified a lot of great stuff here, and really, really well put the way you put it, because I think we could all understand it. At least I can understand it very well. Adam, this might be for you. Let me know. You talked about the protocols. Just so I'm clear, we're clear in our audience. How do you get those protocols? You said that they input them into the website.
Right. Yes, I can definitely take this one. So the way that we get the information back, or the way that our users input the information into our website, is when they order their glove, we give them a private link, which shows them how to set up their glove, make it form fit perfectly for them, to make sure all the attachments are in the right place and make sure everything will work smoothly. So we spit out to them how they are going to go through their testing. So it's a basic test. Everybody will start with the same test, and then they enter that data right back into the site.
And so give us an example of one of those.
Definitely. So we might be going in the weeds a little bit here, but we have these things on our glove to try to prevent the finger from moving, so we can isolate specific joint motions. We call those ribs. So if we have our ribs placed all the way up the finger, so you can only move that last little tip of your finger. So right, you can even now put your thumb right in the middle of your pointer finger, so you can only move the distal or the far end pad of your finger. So we would isolate that motion, and with a band, we'd start with our lightest band, and we'd have someone do reps until failure. So that's going to look like probably 32 reps for someone, just in some of the initial testing we've done. So with that 32 reps, they then enter that into our website, and then we'll kick back to them which specific band they should be using for that finger. But in relation to another finger, maybe let's say now we do the same thing with the middle finger. Let's say they can get only 18 reps with that middle finger. So their training will focus way more on the middle finger than it would on the pointer finger to try to catch it up. So gotcha. Then we go back to that concept of neuromuscular control that Daryl was talking about earlier. So then we can hopefully create the next Greg Maddux, someone that can manipulate finger pressures to get two-seam run or get cut on a baseball, all with slightly different pressures. And one of the things that we've been working on recently that we think can really take our solution to the next step is force measurements. So everybody has seen their basic either fish scale, or they go to the grocery store and they're weighing their produce, their apples or their bananas, and they have these little hanging weights. So what we started playing around with is the ability to measure pulling force on our fingers. So how much that muscle can actually handle, or how much it could input on the baseball. So one of the things that we are working on now and plan to implement is giving our users the chance to test their force. So then we can see sustained force over time in their fingers, as well as single use or single pull or action. so we know how strong they are and how strong they are over time, besides just judging it on reps. We actually have a number that we can put on.
All right, fantastic. And we are getting close to the end here, guys. I want to jump here for a second on something because, you know, I've always thought this, you know, 10, 15 years ago, even longer, you know, I always thought, you know, pitching is one thing, throwing is another. And then I was thinking, you know, kids can get hurt by swinging the bat. I would think because there's extension, there's velocity. There's so many things that are very similar to the throwing motion. I think you had mentioned something about that the glove will actually is good for the hitting aspect. Was I wrong on that?
Indirectly, you're very correct. The specific training protocol or all these things that we've talked about for preventing UCL tears, again, just in a broader stage, they go back to grip strength. And as tested time and time again, grip strength has a high correlation to throwing velocity and exit velocity. That's why Daryl said earlier when you brought up the wrist rollers or ball squeezes or rice buckets, those aren't bad exercises by any means because they help grip strength. They might not help prevent UCL tears, but they make those 20 muscles in the forearm that control finger and wrist movements stronger. So our device, no, it might not be the premier thing to use to increase bat speed, but it increases grip strength overall beyond just training the three muscles that help prevent UCL tears. And with greater grip strength, we can apply greater force into the handle of a bat or into a ball. And with that greater grip strength, we can then create greater bat speeds and greater exit velocities.
So Adam, if we wanted to, I mean, an outside the box question, we could use these gloves when we're hitting.
Again, you wouldn't wear it during the use, right?
Not
while you're swinging, but you use this as a training implement before practice, after practice, at home, in the weight room. The FlexPro Grip glove, you don't use during play or during practice. It's just how you would use your bands for your shoulders. You clip them to the fence, you warm up, you go through your exercises, you get prepped to play. And then afterwards, you can do a full-on workout with it. The glove, the FlexPro Grip glove, functions the exact same way.
Gotcha. All right, man. You guys have been fantastic. At the end here, I want to, and it might lead to another question, it may not, but let's see where it rolls. You know, I just kind of want to open it up to both you guys, Daryl and Adam, and just give you a chance to kind of tell our audience, you know, coaches, players, and parents, because we got all three at all different levels all over the world, anything else that they should know, one about the product or even just, you know, anything about safety and enhancing and strength or anything you want to mention. It's your time. Let's rock and roll, and then I'll go from there.
Yeah, so one of the things that I'd like to cover, we talked briefly about pitch command and neuromuscular control, but I want to dive a little more into that because I think this is something that all the listeners will find very interesting. So that concept of neuromuscular control, or the ability for us to really understand where our bodies are in space and controlling a movement. So Daryl talked about earlier how the pointer finger and the middle finger are the last two things touching a baseball before we release it when we throw. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure all of us can go back to our days on the mound or at the ballpark when a pitcher starts to lose control, where do they tend to miss? Right? You almost always see pitchers who get tired, that ball starts sailing up.
Mm-hmm.
So then we typically hear a coach or a parent or a fan yell, get more out in front, pull it down, come on, you're losing your release point. Just whatever whatever phrase that rings in anyone's mind. I know everybody has their own, but part of the problem is it's not a loss to release point. It's muscles have fatigued or they've grown tired. So those muscles that control that finger flexion no longer can perform that very specific movement. So then that's why you see the automatic overcorrection by a kid who knows he's missed high four straight times. He's not trying to miss high. He's just gotten tired,
right,
or those muscles have gotten tired.
Uh-huh.
So then we see the next one spiked in the ground. So with the device being able to train those very specific movements of the fingers, that's why I talked about being able to train or being able to measure strength over time, as well as individual use strength or a single movement. So that's how we really work to improve command. And then I know Daryl has something just on, I guess, the overall picture of UCL tears that I know he would like to share.
All right, that's great. Adam, hang tight 1 second, because I just one quick question, and that is, the device, and you may have mentioned it, and I can use this device every day. Is there an amount of time? Is there using it too much, not enough? How do we balance that?
Well, we balance that by the individualized protocol. So just like any training, you can certainly do it too much or you can do it too little. I mean, too little is basically the same thing as we should all get in the gym more, right? I mean, every one of us can probably say we should spend more time working out or being more active. But then there's those very few people who have their crazy drive or they always think more is better. But it's important to rest once in a while, or it's important to let the body recover. So it's the same thing training these muscles. It's the same reason that we wouldn't encourage, or the program that each individual will get with the glove won't have them do a full-blown workout immediately before they throw, because then everything is counterproductive. The very muscles that are there to protect the UCL will no longer be doing their jobs. So what the program will show, it'll give kind of a undulating or moving or variable schedule to allow for people to take breaks, whether their game or playing schedule. So certain days are higher intensity or a more reps or more sets in their workout, and other days that they may have a game or have a long practice, they don't need to do quite as much.
Interesting. All right. Well said. And I love the part about, it was interesting you said fatigue, you know, because you always think of fatigue, you know, backside muscles, you know, quads and hamstrings, the legs, you know, now we're getting down to the actual fingers also. So very, very, very interesting. All right, Daryl, what do you got for us? I know you got some good stuff.
Well, just to piggyback onto what Adam said and the point that you raised about fatigue, I think that's critical, Pete. There's no question what we are really trying to do. If you remember a bit earlier in the podcast, I spoke about this concept of UCL tears largely being able to be explained by a simple math equation. If we can't do much to strengthen or increase the UCL's ability alone to handle torque, and we can't do much to handle the associated bones' ability to handle some of that torque, we're left with muscles. If the muscles become fatigued, there's no way they can do that job. So that's where the training protocol becomes critical in this, because no different than doing any other form of activity, as we've discussed. We do too much, the muscles are fatigued. So the last thing you want is a pitcher going into, you know, now if we're talking about a collegiate pitcher, you may have your Friday starter or your weekend starter. But if you have a guy who's throwing in somewhat of a regular schedule, that guy can then get a training protocol that's going to have his muscles in their optimal state at the time he's having to go into his outing. And that's really what you want. It's the same reason we train, right? We don't train as if the training is an end of itself. We train so that when we actually go to perform, we're going to be at our best state to perform explosively. And that's what we're doing here. We're creating a training protocol that's going to be tailored to the individual so then he can manage training with the device. So at the point at which he has to throw, his muscles are going to be best primed to handle that level of support.
You know, guys, I got to tell you, I love this show. I am so thrilled that you guys were able to come on. You know, this has been fantastic. It's an eye opener because I think, you know, you guys have really delved into something here that is going to really help our young, not, you know, pitchers, throwers, help them within their development of their career. And I think it's really going to help in reducing a lot of the injuries that are out there. You guys have done a fantastic job explaining it. I want to, you know, I'm going to put everything we have discussed, I mean, as far as, you know, your website, Twitter, everything, how to get a hold of you on our show notes. I'll let our audience know here in the U.S. and around the world. And I cannot thank you because I know, I'm sure with your background, you guys are extremely busy. And again, Adam, Daryl, thank you for being on the show, my friends.
Thank you again so much, Pete. And I would also say real quickly, I know we've got to run here. Please, any of you listeners, feel free to email us. We're happy to address any of their questions. And much as you started off your show, we certainly owe a debt of gratitude to all of the physicians and researchers who have done yeoman's work over the past decades, because without our ability to pour through the hundreds and hundreds of research studies that we did, there's no way in the world we would have ever been able to get to the point that we're at now.
And just to piggyback on Daryl, obviously you said on email, phone, but we're active on Twitter too. So maybe some of the younger folks or those who have more of a social media background, feel free to reach out. Obviously, we want to be successful as a company, but our end goal is to solve the UCL crisis in baseball. So any way we can help in that capacity, we would love to. So again, thank you to you, Pete, for giving us this platform and putting on a great podcast that's informational to so many.
All right. Thank you, guys. It's Daryl and Adam Moreau. Listen, Flex Pro Grip. I've already gone to the website several times, gone over it. I've joined the newsletter. Folks, you got to go to it, flexprogrip.com, and also on Twitter, Flex Pro Grip. So check it out. Make sure, a lot of great stuff. We'll definitely get the word out. We can't wait to actually get also some feedback from some of the players that we know that are using it. Folks, boy, we really want to thank all of you for joining us today on the show, and want to thank our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group. Thank Daryl and Adam Moreau for joining the show with Flex Pro Grip. And don't forget, check out BaseballOutsideTheBox.com. Check us out on Twitter at BaseballOut. Hey, listen, this is the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. What a show this has been. I got notes all over the place. I'm going to have to listen to it 3 or 4 times. Hey, folks, I want to wish you a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at BaseballOutsideTheBox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at LineupMedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of LineupMedia.fm.